Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place? London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and yes, it is Thursday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that was a shameless plug for my book, The Mad Hatter. My friend Chris Dunham, also known as Iban, did that short ad for me, and I have to tell you, I never get tired of listening to it, because, yes, the Hatter went mad, and some say I'm mad, but that is okay. And I have to also shamelessly plug my oldest granddaughter, who I am so, so proud of. Brittany, Grandma loves you so much. She took her ASVAB today, so everybody keep your fingers, toes, knees, eyes, ears, and say lots of prayers crossed that she passes it so that she can be Army strong. She is the first female in our family to become an American soldier. So God bless her, and God bless our veterans. With that being said, tonight's guest is a young lady who has never had the opportunity to be on a radio show. I'm so excited. This is her debut show. Tickles me to death to be able to break in these artists and authors the right way so that they're no longer nervous and apprehensive when they're interviewed, because I remember my first time, I thought I was going to chew my fingernails off. But her name is Miranda Lynn, and she is a mother of two boys, three four-legged creatures. She's a wife to a loving, loving husband who absolutely does not mind the extra voices in her head. Miranda grew up on a dairy farm in Illinois, but she calls Portland, Tennessee her home now. Welcome to the South. She is an avid reader, a coffee addict, and loves creating her own worlds, characters, and stories for her readers. She is a woman after my own heart. She's a Southerner. She reads, she loves coffee, and she listens to the voices in her head. Welcome, Miranda. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
I am so tickled that you are here. It's fitting that this first day of December we get to launch one of your new books that's coming out, and it's your debut radio show.
I know, it's super exciting.
So let's just get busy and explain to all these lovely folks how Miranda Lynn came to be. Now, I'm going to let you run with it.
Come, you run with it. Well, as my bio says, I grew up on a dairy farm in Illinois, a little bitty town of about 400 people, and lived there till I was about 14. We had 500 head of cattle, 300 acres, and all of the stuff involved with being a farm girl. I helped with chores. I learned to drive a tractor at the age of 8. Learned to drive a truck and had to get myself out to the end of our lane. We had a mile-long sand lane, so I had to drive myself to catch the bus every day and drive myself back in. So I learned a lot of grown-up stuff young, but it was still fun to be and explore and just be a part of that world. I lived on the farm with my mom and my dad and my grandfather and a couple of uncles, so it was a family farm.
And growing up on it, because I have seen this generation of children, and I cringe when I see this, for the most part, there are exceptions, this generation of children who don't understand hard work and the rewards that come from hard work, even when you're 8 years old.
It bothers me too. See a lot of kids feel like they're entitled to everything without having to work for it. That's not how it was when I was growing up. I did get an allowance per month, but I had to help feed the calves. I had to take care of my dogs. I helped my mom around the house sometimes. And I had a lot of responsibility on my own. You know, I had to get myself to the bus and back. My dad would get up before the sun and milk the cows, and then he'd be in the fields until I went to bed or after. And a lot of times my mom would have to go out and help as well. So I learned to make my own dinner, whether it was peanut butter and jelly. I learned to make macaroni and cheese and SpaghettiOs, you know, all that easy, quick stuff. And I just knew, I knew better than to get into stuff. I knew better than to get into trouble, basically, because if you did, then you had more chores put on you. And the worst one for me was having to go down and help Dad at the barn when he milked, because my job is at the end of the milking, I had to take the garden hose and spray it down, spray all the cow poop down, and it was the nastiest thing ever. So I made sure I didn't get into too much trouble because I didn't want that. But it,
let me ask you this. Did it teach you a discipline, a self-discipline, as well as when you got in trouble, you were disciplined because you got the dirtiest job on the farm? But did it also teach you a discipline and a sense of organization?
It did to a point. I'll admit I'm not the most organized person. But at that point, yeah, I had to get myself up. I had to make sure, because I missed the bus, then I wasn't getting to school, and that wasn't good. I'd come home, do homework, go help feed the calves. I mean, it was on a schedule. They couldn't be fed late. And come home, and Mom would have dinner ready, or we'd make a quick sandwich or whatever. So it was very much, I didn't sit around and play games. I didn't get to lounge around and let everybody else do things for me. I had to pitch in. We didn't have, you know, milk. We actually got milk from our barn and pasteurized it ourselves. So we had to go down before the milk truck came that Saturday or Monday or whatever. You know, it was very, certain things had to be done at certain times. So, yeah, I had to learn that, whether I liked it or not.
Well, it was survival, too, because if you didn't take care of the cows,
mm-hmm.
several things happened. One, you lost the revenue that took care of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you didn't have food or milk to put on the table.
Right. Absolutely. And it was,
so, go ahead.
We were very self-sufficient as well. My dad had actually gone to school. He was a mechanic, so we had our own shop. He worked on the tractors, and it taught you a work ethic, yeah, an organization. I don't know, watching my dad and my grandpa and my mom and seeing everything that they did as I grew up taught me that nothing was free. The harder you worked, the more you could reap, you know, but nothing came for free. My dad never sat that I can remember other than an occasional dinner with us, you know. They would take a nap occasionally if the family was harvesting for him, or if there was a break, he would take a 30-minute nap, but that was it. So, yeah, it definitely taught, and I can see it as I've grown. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, you keep it on a schedule. I have to get the kids up. I have to feed them. They have to eat at dinner. I need to get this, and this done before they get home. And then I have to write within that. And if I don't, then the book takes longer, and it takes longer to publish. And it's something that has – you never realize until you stop and look back and go, wow, okay, so I really did learn something, and it wasn't just because they wanted free child labor.
Well, the oldest granddaughter that I said just took her ASVAB, she and her siblings grew up on a commercialized chicken farm. They were laying house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 7 day, 365 a year, 24 an hour day job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you said the calves had to be fed at a certain time because you can't feed them after a certain time, or the repercussions are they don't milk right.
Mm-hmm.
They could get sick and founder. Anything could happen. Well, the same thing on this chicken farm. If the eggs aren't gathered 3 times a day, if the dead aren't picked up, if the feeders and the drinkers aren't taken care of, you lose your product. So these children like you would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go down with their dad and do the first pickup before they ever went to school.
Mm, that's wow. Now, I'm lucky I didn't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But it's very similar. I mean, my mom and dad, they did. Heck, they still do. They're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, they're truck drivers. They drive over the road. So they're still up at 4 a.m. and they're ready to go by 5. Or if they're out on the road, they're up and they're back in the seat driving. They have more discipline than I do, I will admit. Being an only child, I don't have any brothers or sisters. I was a bit spoiled growing up, but not near as bad as what I see some kids today. And it bothers me to see that the generation my kids are growing up in, I'm trying to teach them these morals that you work for what you want, and if you don't work, you're not going to get it. You know, this is what happens, just like on a farm. If you don't feed the calves, if you don't milk the cows at a certain time every day, if you don't feed them at a certain time every day, everything goes wonky and you lose. You lose cows, you lose calves, you lose wet revenue. Trying to teach kids the value of work, of hard work and discipline is so hard when half of their friends don't have to do anything and can sit on their iPod, you know.
And that's a shame because the children of this generation as a whole are being cheated, I feel like, out of being three-dimensional individuals. They've become an entitlement generation of, if I don't get my way, I'm going to go in a safe room and cry.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That doesn't fly at my house, though. So.
No, you want to go in a safe room? I'll give you something to go in a safe room about. Yeah. You want to show your butt? You want to pout? Okay, go in your room and shut the door. But think on these things because you're throwing this fit. There are consequences.
Exactly. And it's teaching. Consequences aren't taught now like they were when I was growing up. Or when you were growing up, and we're from two different generations, but I don't know when it stopped, when we stopped being parents and teaching that and started trying to be our kids' friends and letting them have what they want.
Oh, around my house, when my kids would say, I hate you, I'd say, that's fine. I'm not your friend. I'm your parent.
That's exactly what's come out of my mouth. Yep, I've had that thrown in my face.
And my children have learned that. They tell their, I'm not your friend, I'm your parent.
I'm not your friend, I'm your mother.
Yeah, so get over it. You want a friend?
Exactly.
Go down the street to your friend's house, but understand right now you're under restriction, so you get nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
No TV, no nothing. Go to your room and think on these things.
Yeah.
But we are an entitlement generation, and that is sad. Because in the real world, it doesn't work that way. There was a story where this bunch of kids graduated from college and they went working for this big company and they didn't like the way something was going on. So the leader of this little mini group of entitled children, went into his boss's office and said, here are our grievances and this is how we want to change it, and we're going to change it. And the boss looked at him and said, really? And what's going to happen if I don't want to do this? He says, well, we'll quit. He said, you're fired.
Yep.
So he wrote to, I guess, Dear Abby and was complaining. He said, we did everything that we learned in school, how to present our case, how to do, and we lost our job. And whoever he was writing to said, what did you learn from this? That
yeah.
there's a difference in book learning and the real world.
A big difference.
And they're not going to mollycoddle these kids. So if you've got a $200,000 education and you can't find a job, it could be because you're not approaching it right. You're not going to start at the top and work your way down.
Exactly. You got to stop at the bottom, start at the bottom and work your way up.
There you go. Now, since we've decided how to raise this generation of ungrateful children, I always solve at least one of the world's problems with one of my guests. It's part of what we do here on Off the Chain. How in the world did you get started writing? Was it something that you did in the little bit of free time you had when you were growing up? Was it a dream that you waited until you got grown and had more time? What started
well,
you on this journey?
I've always been a reader. I've loved books. But in high school, I had an amazing teacher that I believe it was my sophomore year. She offered a creative writing class, and I jumped on it. And we did all kinds of different writings. We did poetry. We did short stories. And she just kind of put the writing bug, you know, in my brain. And I've written ever since, little stories in journals, you know, all through college. And I didn't start writing full novels till about 4 years ago. But I've always written something, and I've always read. The more I read, the more I expand my knowledge as far as being able to write. And then I started working with a few independent authors, just helping support them. I had a book blog for a while where I reviewed books, and I got to talking to a few of them, you know, asked the same question, how did you do this? Because I'd always wanted to be somebody like, you know, Anne Rice, or she was one of my favorites in high school.
Yeah, I knew I liked you for some reason. Other than you're just a fellow author.
I devoured her. I can remember begging Mom. I wanted books. I didn't want clothes. I didn't want anything else. I wanted to go to the bookstore. Always wanted to go to the bookstore. So, yeah, that started the passion, and it just kind of developed. But the one thing that was suggested, and actually the piece of advice that stuck in my head and started me really going for, you know, truthfully writing and publishing, is I was told to write the story that I hadn't read, the story I wanted to read but wasn't out there. And so that's what I did 5 years ago. Yeah, it was 5 years ago. I did NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, for the first time. And I wrote Destiny Finds Her in 30 days.
Wow.
So I wrote 50,000 words. It's the only time I've ever won it. I've tried every year since, but I wrote it, and then I let it sit because I was scared. You know, you write it, and you're like, okay, well, that's crap. So I put it away, and about a year and a half after that, I met a couple of authors here in town. I was working at the local library, and I was doing the writing group, and I was encouraged to take it back out and revise it and just run with it. So I did. I finally did and published it 2 years ago.
And that brings me to, other than Anne Rice, who are some of your other favorite authors?
Oh, gosh. Janet Ivanovich. I love her Stephanie Plum series. Tanya Kappas. She's a Kentucky author. She has an amazingly cute witch series. I've actually met her a few times. She's sweet in person and uber encouraging for other authors. Charlene Harris, devoured her books. Dorinda Jones. I'm actually reading a series now by B.C. Burgess. It's a witch series. I'm horrible with book names. And that's just a few. I'll read almost anything. I'll give anything a chance. some
well,
things
see, when you said Anne Rice and Janet Ivanovich and the Kentucky author, I've read those. I devoured Anne. I just got her new book, just got Janet Ivanovich's new book. So I understand your eclectic taste in books
mm-hmm.
because those are some of my favorite authors as well. Love those women writers. They're hysterical.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And Anne Rice, if you really read Anne Rice, I mean, really read her, she has
mm-hmm.
a dark humor in her books.
She does. She does. I just, it was one that I picked up, and I don't remember if I got it at the library or if I bought it on sale, but I picked up Interview with a Vampire, and I read it in a sitting. And I had to
that
have the rest of them.
That was my first one I read. Yep, that's the first one I read of hers, too. Back in the 90s,
yep.
I read that book. And
yep.
ever since then, I've been hooked.
Yeah, I know. And I'm
love
the type
that.
Of person that if I sit down and read a book, I'm probably going to finish it. I can't read a little bit here and a little bit there. For example, I was reading the first or the second book in B.C. Burgess' series. It's the Mystic series, Monday Night, and I finished it and looked at my clock. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, I have to get up.
I had a time or two. Yes,
oh, my God, I have to get up in 4 hours and get the kids to school. Yeah. I'm still trying to catch up on that one. But
oh, bless your heart. Well, what other than books, which is and I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be a writer, you have to read. You absolutely have to read. It's imperative that you read because
yes.
And you read anything you can get your hands on. And there's a
yes.
reason for that, which we'll discuss in a little bit. But other than reading and writing, what other things are you passionate about?
Coffee, wine.
love it.
I love my kids.
Love it.
I love to travel when I get the chance. In spending time with my girlfriends, I have four friends. We get together once a month and we craft. We get together at my best friend's house. This last time we got together, we made decorations for Christmas. We did 3D shadow boxes and we made little decorations for the walls for Christmas. Sometimes
wow.
we get together and play games and drink wine. You know, it's just keeping those connections, keeping me sane.
Yes.
is a huge passion as well. And, you know, just supporting my husband. He's retired military. He served 24 years in the Army. And
thank him for his service.
I will.
Please thank him for his service.
He's been retired for 4 years. And he does everything he can so that we have what we need. And, it's rare to be able to say that. We've been married for 15 years, which is a feat in itself. But I'm also passionate about introducing kids to reading as well. I worked at the library for 3 years. I'm one that we just actually cleaned out my youngest Jackson's bookshelf, and we've got about 8 books that he no longer reads or wants, so they're going to be donated to the school library.
Sweet.
Or sometimes we'll donate them to any church that has, you know, a tree where families are needing help with Christmas. You know, give a book. Those are my
because
go-to gifts for presents
books
for
are
anything.
Knowledge.
You get a book. Yes,
books
they are.
Books are powerful.
They are. And these kids are – they have to read for school. They have to read 20 minutes a day or 2 pages a day or whatever. And they don't find it fun. So I want to help them find that story that they can get wrapped up in and go, okay, this isn't such a bad thing.
Right.
Because I hate when a kid looks at me or if I ask them, you know, what do you like to read? Oh, I don't like to read. What? It, like, hurts my heart.
It hurts
because
my heart,
it is.
Yeah.
It's knowledge. Whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you're still learning something. You're growing your imagination, which is growing your mind.
And in most fiction, there are segments of facts.
Yes.
Even if you read a sci-fi or a fantasy, there are facts. I call them little jewels hidden within the book.
Mm-hmm. And my oldest would call them Easter eggs.
Yes.
I guess that's a gamer thing. There's Easter eggs. Well, I tell them there's Easter eggs in every book you read. You just have to read them and find them, you know.
And read with an open mind.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So it would be safe to say that some of the life's lessons that you learned as a child growing up on this dairy farm, you've passed down to your children?
I'm trying to. I hope they're getting it. Yeah, I would say that I'm doing the best that I can. They're in their tweens and teens now, so of course we've got all that. I've gone from being Miss Know-It-All and I'm awesome to, yeah, you're dumb and whatever.
Well, and honey, trust me, they'll outgrow that. When they get in their 30s, they'll say, Mom, you're not so dumb after all. You've learned a lot.
Yeah, I guess I was an early bloomer. I think it was my mid-20s when I finally called my mom and said, you know what? I am sorry. You really are as smart as you said you were. And ever since, honestly, I have to say probably the last 3 or 4 years as I'm dealing with puberty and changing and kids wanting to be themselves in their own way but still trying to keep them in line, I have called my mom so many times and went, did I do this? And she'll go, yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't remember. I don't remember acting this way. I don't remember. But if I did, I am sorry. And she just laughs like you.
Well, it's called paying for your raisin, honey.
It is, yeah.
You're paying for, that's what I tell the children, you're paying for your raisin because, believe you me, that curse works because my mother used to say, I hope you have children and they grow up and be just like you. Well, I did, and so when my children were small, I passed along the curse and it worked. So you get to pass it along to your children. And they will.
It's just a continuing cycle, yes.
Yeah, but the beautiful thing is, children are like empty vessels. I think of them as a lump of clay that if they are molded and finished out and half of a right way, because no child comes with a set of instructions, because if they did, we would all be perfect parents. But if they're molded with a set of moral compasses and a set of right and wrong and a sense of direction. Now, notice I said a sense of direction because they're going to take their own journey. But if they have a sense of direction, they'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's repetition is key.
Yes.
So I repeat and repeat, even with the eye rolling, and I still repeat because I know eventually it'll sink in, and they'll get to that point where they're faced with the challenge that we've talked about, and my voice will be in his head going, remember what your mother said. Make the right choice.
My oldest daughter says, Mother, would you get out of my head? Because she called me up the other day. She says, Mother, I sound just like you now. I said, yes, the curse works.
Yep, I've done that too. I'm like, I have opened my mouth and my mother has come out. Oh, okay.
Isn't it lovely? Sound just, maybe we should write a book called It's Words That Our Mother Said, or We Sound Like Our Mother, or something to that effect.
It would sell.
It would be funny, too. It would be a lot of fun.
Everybody could relate to that.
Especially if they're mothers. Because they understand we are the product of what we learn. And this is what, sadly, I go back to this generation because I see this generation of entitled children. They have become the product of what they've learned. And what they have learned is it is okay to have no moral compass, to whine, to feel entitled, and to say, okay, Mom and Dad, you owe me this $200,000 education, but I'm going to go in this little safe room and suck on my pacifier and color with my crayons and hold my little blanket and pet dogs because my little feelings got hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not. If I were a parent of one of those children and I knew that my child was in that safe room, I would hop on a plane, I would go to that college, I would jerk them up by their rear end, and I would paddle them till they couldn't sit down for a month. Then they could go to their safe space and think about it.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I'm on the same wavelength there.
Well, I told the children years ago, I said, you might get bigger than me,
mm-hmm.
and you might get taller than me,
mm-hmm.
but remember this, because I'm 4'11", my son is 5'8", 5'9". I said,
mm-hmm.
remember this, I will always, no matter how old you get, and no matter how old I get, and no matter how decrepit I get, I will always be able to beat your ass.
Yep, I told my I have a 13-year-old, he's 5'2", I'm 5'9". He's all like, I'm almost as tall as you, and I'm like, I don't care how tall you get, I can still whoop you.
And don't ever let him forget it.
Oh, yeah, don't.
Never let him forget it. Oh, mercy, now that we've solved another one of the world's ills.
Let's see what else we could solve.
Yeah. Since you're coming back, we forget your books tonight. We'll just solve world problems. I don't want world peace. It's too boring.
I know. Everybody all happy at now. That's not a challenge.
No, it isn't. I mean, open the door and everybody's singing Kumbaya. Why? No, we gotta have things shook up a little bit.
A little bit. Maybe not as much as they are now, but a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, I think so. But let's talk about what made you decide to write the, and I call it a mixed genre because you do write a mixed genre.
Yeah, I do. The Destiny series is.
Before we tell them what the mixed genre is, what made you decide to go in that direction?
Well, it stems from the piece of advice I was given, write the story you want to read. Well, I love all types of genres. I love time travel. I love paranormal. I love, and paranormal is such a huge genre. I love vampires. I love shifters. I love fae. You know, I love all of that. I love fantasy. But I always wanted to read something that, like, combined. And there are a few out there, but it was never exactly what I was looking for. So that's what I sat down to write. And when I started thinking of that, that's when the characters decided to pop up and go, oh, yeah, well, you know what? Here's my story. So it's not so much me writing as them telling me. I'm that author that has probably four different characters in my head right now.
You only have four?
Well, I've made some of them be quiet. I can't handle more than four at a time. So
Miranda,
I've sent a few
make
off
them
with some drinks.
Go away.
Oh, no. They're having drinks.
Oh, okay. Well,
they're enjoying themselves in their little corner. Yeah. They don't go away.
There you go.
That's what I sat down. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try. And I'm not a huge researcher, so I didn't want to have to write something that required a lot of history to be brought into it. So that's what I love about writing. Is you can make it what you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to, in fiction, you don't have to follow exactly what happens. So I just created my own little world, and I threw in what I wanted, my time travel and my coffee and my love of shoes and a gay best friend and a dog who I love. And you've got some fae in there and magic, and I wrapped it all up in a bow. And then said, well, it's not done. I need more. So I'm now two books, a short story into it, and I'm working on the third book now.
Okay, the first in the Destiny series was called what?
Destiny Finds Her.
Okay. Tell the audience a little bit about the premise of the book and how it morphs into the other two of the book.
Okay. The basis of the story is about a 25-year-old girl named Jamie. And it starts out in present day. Excuse me. But she finds out on her 25th birthday that she's not who she was raised to think she was. She was actually adopted. And she, at that point, actually gets transported back to 17th century Scotland. She finds out that she has fey blood in her and has a whole different family that she's never been introduced to. She has magical powers that she either has to decide that she'll accept them or she won't. And that decision, in the midst of her learning all of this, she meets a sexy Highlander and is taken in by his family because she's lost, of course, and falls in love with him. And she has to decide whether to accept who she is to save him and his clan or ignore it, turn her back on it, and try to go back home and let them all be destroyed. And there's a lot of twists and turns in it. Near the end, you'll find out that she has a sister. I'm not going to go much further into that, but that's the premise of this book. So Jamie is the main character, and then Devlin is the Highlander that she falls in love with. And it's a roller coaster ride of her learning who she is and learning her powers and being a sassy 21st century person and melding with a 17th century Scot. So.
Which could cause sparks in the moors.
Yeah. There's some really good sparks.
So Blair's destiny picks up where the end of Destiny finds her.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, it does. And Blair is Jamie's sister. So this is a story. Blair's background, they were separated at birth, and they're twins. I'll let you know that, but they're not identical. She was raised in the land of Fae, and she was taken by the Fae King and trained to be his right-hand assassin. So she is seen as evil by everybody except her sister. Jamie doesn't see that in her. And so she's determined to save her sister from, you know, a death sentence and to take her away from everything and out of the clutches of the Fae King. So book two actually... Blair's destiny is set mostly in the land of Faerie, where they meet sprites, and another character that comes up is, his name is Jack, but he's the green man. He is in charge of the trees and the souls of the trees, and he can move throughout the woods that way, and actually through time that way as well. And so it's about their group, Jack and Blair and Jamie and Devlin working together to come up with a plan to overthrow the king. The Oracle shows up in this book as well and kind of guides them. She can see their destiny and she can help them to a certain point, but she has a big role in it as well near the end. So it's definitely more paranormal fantasy. But still back in the 17th century. But it does, at the end, switch times again. So
then that brings us up to Destiny Finds Her Yesterday?
No. Those are the only two books in the series. The Oracle is a short story, and it's... The Oracle was a very loud character in my head, and she wanted her story... but it didn't fit in with book two. So I wrote her background and her backstory separately on its own. So it's available. It doesn't have to be read in any certain order. You can pick that up and kind of read about her, which is fun, and where she comes from. And gives you a little more background if you want on Jamie and Blair's history as well. But book three doesn't have a title yet. And I'm writing it now. Yeah. Yeah, the titles are always the last thing that comes for me when I write. So right now it's just book three.
Okay, then. But you do have one coming out that has all kinds of, makes my head spin. When I read it, I'm going, what has she done? My Lord, I thought, and rice made my head spin. Miranda is making my head spin. Tell us about Mac.
Okay, Mac is the first in a new series, that a Paranormal Shifter series that I'm doing. It's the Black Mountain Pack series. And unlike the Destiny series, which it needs to be read in order to be able to understand it, this series I plan each book you can read in any order. It's not going to be particular. But this is Shifter World kind of spun on its head. I like to go outside of the box when I write my stories. So in Mac, what's happened is it starts 50 years after basically what's called the coming out, where all shifters have decided to come out to the humans, and it didn't go as well as planned. And so following that, for years, they were actually hunted because humans feared them rather than accepted them, and that dwindled down their numbers, basically, in all breeds and species. So they, at this point, have learned the only way to survive is to actually live in packs together, or prides, depending on who the alpha of the pack or the pride is what it's called. So this one is a pack because Mac's father is a wolf. But within the makeup of members, there are different species. We have wolves, we have panthers, we have a lynx, we have a fox, we have a tiger, and they're all living together fairly peacefully. They've learned the only way they're going to survive in our world is to band together and grow that way. So this story is about Mac, who is the alpha's son. He is a panther. And he was actually adopted by Jerome, who's the alpha of the pack. So it's his story, finding his mate. And it's a fun ride. I've gotten a lot of good feedback from my beta readers and my early advanced reader copy readers. So I'm excited. It releases December 13th.
So ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first here. Mac by Miranda Lynn. And it is a paranormal shifter novel that will stand you on your head. I can't wait.
That's right.
I'm excited.
I'm super excited. So am I.
Because you've just taken the whole dynamic of and maybe some readers don't understand what shifters are, but shifters are creatures that can go from human to animal at will, like a werewolf, for instance.
Yes.
And that's why they're called shifters, because they shift. Now, a thought came to my head when you said it was the coming out. I'm thinking that's sort of like the gays were treated when they first came out, or any new group that comes out in the open,
mm-hmm.
they're not accepted.
Exactly.
For who they are.
And I think that's part of what went into writing this is we all have to learn to get along. You know, we are a melting pot, especially the U.S., you know, so we can't stay within our bounds, you know, like in a normal shifter book, most of them that you'll read, it's usually about a pack of wolves or a pride of cats or a den of bears. You know, it's all the same. So I wanted to throw that out the window and go, you know what, they have to learn to get along too.
Uh-huh.
Because they're not all animal. They're also human. They have
uh-huh.
both. So I was like, I like to challenge people. I like to challenge my readers. I'm like,
it.
It's either going to go great or it's going to be bad, and I don't really care.
Well, but it, as we talked about earlier, you can learn, even in fiction, If a reader reads, say that fast three times, with an open mind, there is something to be learned in every book we pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there is.
We put a part of ourselves in everything that we write. And in your case, we have to think about, while we're all Americans, by the grace of God, we all come from different backgrounds, ethnicities, cultures, ancestry. We are not carbon copies of each other. And the things that we hate about another person is probably the same things that we hate about ourselves, but we don't want to admit it.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I don't know, I wanted to write where everybody got along. And, you know, even with their differences and their tempers and the temperaments, you know, they all find a way to work together to make the family work and make the pack work and protect themselves and those that they love around them. So.
And they have a common cause, and it's called survival.
Exactly.
And there's an old adage that goes, we either all survive together or we all hang separately. We have to mesh as a society and embrace each other's differences and embrace our own idiosyncrasies and stop hiding behind of I don't have any, because when we say that, we lie.
Yes.
So there we solved yet another world's problem, Miranda. I'm so proud of us. Let's mark that one off of our list.
We are just rocking this out.
I'm telling you. So Destiny Finds Her Yesterday, that is not part of the series, that's a standalone?
No.
Or is that's the one you're working on?
There's not one titled that.
Maybe that was just what was under the book or something.
It could be. It may have been the start of the info.
It could have been.
I'll have to take a look. Could be a typo, too. I'm notorious for those.
Well, so am I, but that's part of our uniqueness as authors.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's also why I have a wonderful editor who catches everything.
Amen. Could not live without my editor, I'm telling you. In fact, I have two of them. I have an outside editor, and then my publisher also goes back and edits. So I have two sets of eyes looking at my work because I'm dyslexic, and I'm very bad about in my mind I've written it, but when it's on paper when I read it, it's the way that it's the way my mind says I've written it.
Right.
But it's not.
But it's
the
not
way
how.
It's on. No.
Paper. So, yeah.
Thank God.
Speaking of dyslexia, did you know, this is a little tidbit, Sherilyn Kenyon, the amazing Dark Hunter series author, is also dyslexic.
See? We are among good company.
We are. We are.
And I'm not ashamed to say I'm also left-handed, so I'm highly intelligent.
So is she.
That's what? Yeah, and it's okay.
It is. Absolutely.
Makes me unique. I'm so proud of that. See, I'm in good company.
You are
so,
in good
ladies
company.
And gentlemen, if you are dyslexic, embrace it, because I have so much fun with it. I'm telling you, but I have lots of fun with it. My sweet brother taught me how to embrace myself because he's mentally challenged. And he was born at a time when the mentally challenged and the physically challenged were put in back rooms and left alone, or put in asylums and left alone.
Yes.
And what he says is that the title that is used for him is he is retarded, but then we're all retarded in some way. But what he says is, I am not retarded. I am just slow, and that's okay.
Yes. And it is okay.
Yes, it is, because he's taught me way more than I've ever taught him. But anyway, so let's tell everybody where all these beautiful books can be found. We know that Mac is coming out. How many is going to be in the series of Mac?
I have 6 planned, but I have a feeling there's going to be more, because as time goes on, different characters will pop up. So I have 6 on my board right now. I have 6 titles and information. But it may go more. Who knows? This is going to be a fun one to write.
When the voices in your head get through partying, they're going to start snapping at you.
They are. Well, I already have 6 notebooks as well, because they tend to interrupt, and I have to stop and pull the notebook out for their story and write down what they're telling me. So, my office is a mess. I have notebooks everywhere, but it's okay. It's organized mess for me.
Well, you know, chaos is the sign of a genius at work. You know that, right?
Tell my husband that all the time. I'm like, I'm not lazy. I'm a genius.
It's organized chaos. We know, don't touch anything because we know where it is and what's, so don't touch it. Because if you touch it, then I'll never find it.
Yeah, just leave it alone. Leave my office alone.
I understand.
And we'll be fine. Yeah,
so
you can find, all of them will be on Amazon.
Okay, where can you be found? Because I know after tonight's show, people are going to say, I got to meet this crazy lady.
Well, you can, my website is just simply MirandaLynn.com. And you can find me on Facebook. You just search Miranda Lynn, you can friend me, or I do have a Facebook page that you can find. Just search author Miranda Lynn and follow me there. I actually have, since Mac is coming out December 13th, I have giveaways going on all month, and I have the cutest swag that I had made. They are ornaments, but on the inside, hanging down, is the cover of Mac. They're the cutest things.
Sweet.
So I'm giving
that
those away this month.
Sweet. So jump over there, people. Go see Miranda Lynn and get one of her swags, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing that will never come around again.
That is true, because I only have 11 of them.
See, so there you go. First 11.
Limited edition.
Go grab them now. So now let me ask you this. We've got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
When you were growing up and you were writing in your journals and you got involved in school with a wonderful teacher, and I'm so envious. I wish I'd had that kind of support that you did growing up, because it wouldn't have taken me till I was 54 years old to get my first book published because I was afraid it wasn't good enough. But that being said, if someone has a dream and wants to make that dream come true, and I say this just about at every show, I don't care if it's garbage collector, because that is a very important job. And
yes,
if you want to be a if you want to be a garbage collector, number one, they make damn good money, and number two, it is honest work, and number three, it is extremely important, because if we didn't have them, our streets would run rampant with trash and rats and all other nefarious creatures. So,
and kids love the trash guy.
Yes, they do.
My kids love the trash guy.
They do.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yes.
And the trash guys love the children because children are honest.
Yes.
So, say somebody has a dream and they don't know how to make that dream come true, or they don't know where to start. Like when you wanted to write, fortunately you got involved in a writer's group and people were saying, this is how you make it happen. Just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell someone?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have a great teacher, but I was also fortunate enough that I finally got the courage, and I reached out to some of the authors that I had read. I sent them a message. How did you get started? What do you do? So find somebody who has your dream, who's living your dream, and email them. I mean, the worst that can happen, they won't respond to you.
Exactly.
But most of the time, I have found those that are successful have no problem encouraging, giving tips, giving advice. You know, I had two authors that I had read their whole series, and with my first book, I had the sex scene, and I sent Dina Remiel. I love her to death. I'm like, will you read this? Because her books, the scenes were fabulous. I'm like, will you read this and give me your feedback? And she did. No problem. Sent me her notes. She's like, this is great. This I would change this, and you need to do this because it's not quite there. So just reach out and start trying to make those connections. It may take two or three times, but don't give up. I think that's the biggest thing is don't give up.
Exactly.
We are our worst critics. So you have to get over yourself and take that step.
And you have to get out of your own damn way, too. I had a real good friend who said, you have to get out of your own damn way, because we stop ourselves. We go right to the edge of that cliff, and we go, Maybe not so much.
Yeah.
Like the little bird that runs up to the edge of the ocean. As soon as the wave comes in, they run back to the dry water, I mean the dry sand, because they don't want to put their toes in the water. They might get wet.
Yeah, that fear. You have to get over that fear.
Yes. And ladies and gentlemen, the acronym for fear is false evidence that appears real. Well, and as artists, Miranda and I both understand that, well, what if nobody likes it? Well, who the hell cares? You're not writing it for them. You're writing it because, like she says, the voices in our head will not shut up. Right,
exactly.
Miranda?
Yeah, exactly. And if your dream is to write, just write. The one thing that I love and was told to me is your first draft is basically verbal vomit. You're just getting it out, getting it on the page, and that's what revisions are for. You go back and read it and tweak it at that point. So whatever you're looking to do, that first chance is just get it done, get it over with, and then you can continue on. But the biggest thing is just don't stop, don't give it up.
And don't be afraid to make revisions. I've ripped out entire chapters because I've said, wait a minute. The voices are saying, Yvonne, what are you doing? This isn't how I want you to write it. And I'm going, I don't care, I'm writing it this way. And they're saying, watch this, I'm shutting up.
Yeah.
And I'm going, where'd you go?
Yeah.
Come back.
What'd I do?
What'd I do?
Hey.
Hey, I'm sorry, come back. Come back, please come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've had to do that a time or two. Eating humble pie is not fun with the voices in your head.
No, it's not. But it has to be done sometimes.
Yes, it does, because it's like another author and I were talking about. It's really their story. We're just a facilitator.
Exactly. And I've tried to explain it to people. It's like they're putting a movie on in my head.
Yes.
And I have to translate it into words, so that you as a reader can see it in your head.
And it's okay if you as a reader don't see the same don't interpret the movie as the same as we're putting it on paper. That's okay, because each person that reads a book interprets it differently. It's just like I said before, if 10 people are watching a train wreck, you're going to get 10 different eyewitness reports, because people process things differently.
Yeah, and that's okay. I love talking to readers after they have read my book, because everybody's got a different favorite. Everybody's got a different view. Or they'll come up and go, did you mean this? Well, no, I didn't, but I'm glad that's what you got out of it, you know.
Exactly. And it's not right or wrong.
No, we're both right. It's all good.
I love it. I absolutely. And you know you're coming back, right? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm bringing Miranda back because she and I have just clicked and we're having so much fun. And this thing's going to stop in a few seconds. So before it stops, first of all, thank you, my new friend, for spending an hour with me. I appreciate it so much. You're wonderful. And please tell your husband thank you for his service. Thank you for your sacrifice. And
absolutely.
Tomorrow night I have at 8 o'clock, comedian Kenny Eckenberg's going to be here. That's going to be a riot and a half. I have no idea where we're going for that show. On Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I have M. Calhoun. She is an author out of Alaska, so that should be a chilling hour.
Ooh.
I like that play on words, didn't you?
I did.
And so as soon as we get off from here, Miranda, I'll get in my little book and I'll write you a note and say, how's this date sound? Because we have so much more that we can talk about. Characters and building characters. And we didn't even talk about the event you're going to be at. The Authors at the Opry and the Wicked and the Quad Cities. Yes. So if y'all are in, go look on her page and go to those and look her up and tell her I sent you and grab her and hug her for me, because I'm from the South and that's what we do. Thank you again, my friend. I appreciate so much you coming on and spending an hour.
Thank you for having me. It has been a blast, and I can't wait till we do it again.
And see, you're not nervous anymore, are you?
Not at all. I was, to begin with, completely honest, I was nervous.
Just me and you and 6,000 of our closest friends. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, with my marvelous Miranda Lynn. Until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, we say good night. Miranda,
good
hang
night.
On for just a second. Okay, we're now off the air. We've gone into archives, so anything we say now will show up in archives, but because we're off the air, unless people listen to the archives, they won't hear it.
But
what I wanted to tell you is once we hang up, the show will download into archives, mm-hmm. upload into archives. Then I will download it, and I will put it up on Spreaker, which Spreaker then puts it up on TuneIn Radio and YouTube.
Okay.
This show from Blog Talk Radio goes to iTunes and Stitcher, which you can hear in your car if you have Sirius Radio. I will also put it up on podcast.com, Podomatic, Mixcloud, and SoundCloud.
I will
load the link up on my page and tag you in it, and I want you to take these links and put them on your website. I want you to promote the daylights out of this show. And that's my gift to you.
Thank you.
Because you're
awesome.
I am only as successful as you are, my friend.
Yes, and I will be, and I'll be sending it out to my people and having them, just my few little followers, and we'll get it out there as well. This was great. I had a blast.
I did too, and you're going to have more and more followers. I'm telling you, this show is like, when I ran the stats this morning, we're at 5,550 listeners between the show itself and all the podcasts. The show itself is at 1,600 listeners.
Wow.
Just
that's awesome.
This show. So pretty soon we'll be at 6,000, and then it'll just keep going. And we're fixing to syndicate it on Riot on the Set Radio, so that's another avenue. So as soon as he gets it up and gets it syndicated, then all the shows that go up there, and we have the 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon slot. So if I have a one-hour show, a two-hour show, it will be there. So, yeah. So you guys are getting out there, and I'm so proud and so grateful and so appreciative.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that I contacted you, and this is great. It's definitely opened a new avenue and a new friend.
Yes. And put your books up on my page.
Okay.
My page is an open page. Put your books up there, because this is what I do. I pay it forward. People have been good to me.
Thank you. I absolutely will, because I'm max up for pre-order right now for 99 cents, so I'll throw that up there.
Yeah, throw it up on my page, and then when I put this show up and say it's in archives and tag you in it, I'll put Mac, her latest book, Mac, is in pre-order for 99 cents on Amazon. All right,
wonderful.
My darling.
Thank you.
Okay, and let me get you set up for after the first of the year, and we'll have more fun.
Sounds great.
All right, darling. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.